Welcome to the Washington AI Network podcast. We're here in Las Vegas at CES. CES 2026 is the largest technology show in the entire world. I'm excited to welcome Pooya Dhiyanath. He's Chief Revenue Officer at Quantum Computing Inc., QCI, and he is one of the leaders in quantum. Welcome, Pooya. Quantum, everyone is talking about it. They're fearful, but they all think it's game-changing. It's kind of like AI in the beginning. Just give us the basics.
So quantum stems from the new modality in doing computation that comes fundamentally from doing physics differently. And it comes from the fact that, as opposed to the classical computing that you deal with zero and one as the bits of doing the calculations, here you're dealing with a combination of a zero, one. Basically, in a way you can say, if I simplify it, it's like a superposition of zero and one and all the possibilities in between. Quantum by nature is a stochastic way of calculation. So it's going to give you a probability of possible scenarios of a kind of problem that you're trying to solve. So it's not necessarily a replacement for a classical computer. It can solve certain kind of problems better, the kinds that is going to take a classical computer many years and maybe even thousands of years to solve. Quantum computer potentially can solve them really fast and really quickly. And what is actually making people excited and some people concerned about it is, with a quantum computer, you can theoretically, there are algorithms that exist that you can basically break the encryption that is currently being used for having secure communication between point A and point B. And with a quantum computer, you can break that encryption very fast and very quickly. So that makes all the communication that is happening basically prone to being hacked into very easily.
Well, that's what everyone's afraid of. I mean, this is the Washington AI Network. People talk about quantum all the time. And all I can think of is all the money that's been going into every single kind of drone software or just regular software to move things around at the Veterans Administration or wherever you're talking about. The fear in the language is, when quantum comes, this someone's going to break in. Is that true?
That is true. Funny enough, the solution to that problem is also quantum. Mm-hmm. So there is this technology that exists on quantum communication, and that's actually one of the areas that we do at QCI as well. The quantum communication is a way of bringing quantum security to a communication channel that happens between point A and point B. Now, one feature that exists in the quantum world is called entanglement. Mm-hmm. And when two particles are entangled, it means that if you know the status of one, you automatically would know the status of the other one. That means that you can apply this concept to a communication that is happening between point A and point B. And if someone tries to tamper the communication somewhere in the middle, the two parties on the site immediately would know, because they know that they haven't initiated any change. And through that quantum secure method, entanglement, you can make a communication channel very secure.
So you're talking about these two different areas of communication, everything that's in the middle, mm-hmm. you know, photons. How about that? Did I impress you?
Yes.
Photons, pixels, you know, whatever is in the middle or in there, mm-hmm. right? And so then anyone will be able to go in using quantum and extract whatever information or break it up.
That is true. That anyone, though, I mean, with the caveat that people with deep pockets can do that, and that means that certain sovereign governments can do that, and that has national security implications for countries like United States or we at the West or things like that, because if all the information that we are transferring around, if they are all exposed to an adversary right now, then they can go and figure out what is happening, what Bob was telling Sally and what Sally was telling to Joe the other day. So all of these would get exposed. And the solution to that, actually, interestingly enough, to secure all of that is quantum. There are algorithms that are now being developed for post-quantum cryptography. That's the things that...
Post-quantum? Wait, we're still waiting for quantum.
The post-quantum comes from the fact that it deals with communications that is good, deal with the quantum part. And there are ways that hardware-wise you can make the communication also secure using quantum communication technologies that are out there. At QCI particularly, that's an area of focus for us. And what we have made is, you know, for communicating between point A and point B, the first thing is, if you want to have it a secure communication, the two parties at the two sides need to figure out that A is A, B is B, actually. This is called authentication. So A needs to know that B is B, and B needs to know that A is actually A. That happens in any communication protocol that is already there. Now, there is this thing called quantum key distribution. That's a technology for making the transfer of information secure.
But if your authentication is not already secured, then the transfer of information doesn't matter because then someone can go and impersonate the channel.
But, and who's ahead, by the way? Is the U.S. ahead on that?
U.S. is in the competition, but China is very advanced and it makes me nervous. So they have taken, the Chinese government has taken this very seriously. And I think in, on the West, the U.S. government has acknowledged that this is an area that we need to focus and we are working on that. It is a competition and we want to be the winners of it.
Are you talking to the U.S. government or any governments about how you see this technology keeping them safe?
We have started conversations with the stakeholders within the U.S. government, and we would like to showcase our technology to them to show how we can help mitigate the problems that may come post-quantum, basically.
Because they've been talking about a quantum strategy for, I would say, the last year, but it hasn't rolled out yet.
There has been lots of movement that we hear in the news about the quantum. The efforts on it started many years ago, but it has ramped up recently very much. And thanks to the current administration, they are taking it very seriously, and we are very happy to hear about that.
But you're saying that this isn't just about national security issues, but also like finance. So a lot of what's happening at CES is the talk about agents, just like everywhere else. But this is how agents will actually work. If you have agents, right, that are helping you execute financial plans or get your drone on the front lines, sure, or something like that, you're saying that quantum could sort of go in there and maybe break that up, make it stop it from, okay, you're looking at me like I'm crazy, but I'm trying to make quantum real for people to understand. And again, we're talking about agentic, right? So you tell your AI how to do this, and how will they know, say, if the Chinese get ahead, that they've stepped in and hurt your payment?
Those are all possibilities. But let's say a Chinese government should have nothing better to do to come wanting to interfere with like what a clothes folding drone or a robot is doing at home. What we are trying to do with our quantum computing application is actually focusing on how we can help people and how we can change people's lives. And even with the current Gen Zero generation, we have shown at CES some live demos that we had that we can have advantage in certain areas. For instance, we did demonstrate a portfolio optimization for finance applications and did some comparison with the historical data. And the way that we designed our algorithm and we use our quantum computer, we showed that we could outperform the historical data within the same period of time. That's one application that we showcased. We also showcased, for instance, an application regarding logistics. And using our quantum computer, you can find the best path that a drone can take to go, let's say, over a city landscape with lots of restriction, rules, FAA regulations, and all of that, and things that they need to avoid. We showed how we can find the best path and minimize the risk while making sure that the drone can make it from point A to point B.
When you say that, though, is it fair to say that it's because quantum is faster? Because the way you make it sounds faster than ones and zeros.
Faster is one aspect of it. In certain applications, using the quantum algorithms and quantum computers is going to be faster. It's also, quantum can, in our case, in some of these problems, this is called an NP-hard problem. Not trying to get too technical, but we can account for third-order polynomials that you cannot easily do for using a classical computer. A classical computer needs lots of resources to be able to solve that problem, while with quantum, you can readily have that available to you. The final outcome is that it will be faster, but faster in what sense? It's going to provide you with scenarios that weren't available to you before. Like you can see the solutions that you couldn't see before. So that basically gives you a wider range of available solutions.
What about on the health side? Will quantum help?
Quantum can help. There are people trying to use quantum for imaging applications that can have medical applications. That's not an area of focus that we focus on or we work on. But yeah, quantum can have implications in there as well. Now, mind you that what we are talking about is quantum 2.0. This is a new generation of quantum that we are talking about. Quantum 1.0 has affected our lives for many years and many decades. Right.
In what way?
You know, the whole semiconductor industry is actually is based on quantum mechanics, and that's quantum 1.0. Mm-hmm. And now we are talking about like harvesting features that were not engineered before, namely the entanglement and superposition. I mean, these things that people hear about the Schrodinger cat being dead and alive at the same time, that's the concept in quantum 2.0 that people are now engineering and have learned how to engineer it.
So we've got data centers going all around the world. Mm-hmm. Virginia's the data center capital of the world. Is quantum going to be part of data centers?
Quantum has to be absolutely part of the data center. And now one of the things about Virginia being the capital of data center in the world is that people are now paying higher electricity bill because of all the power that is going to the data centers, and people are not happy. Now, how can quantum help? Or in our case, we actually showcased our use of our quantum machine for a quantum machine learning application that you could basically use it, for instance, financial fraud, credit card transaction fraud detection. But basically, in its essence, is a quantum machine learning and quantum use for training of the AI. And the way that we did it is that we are able to show that we can process large amount of data, much, much more than GPUs can handle right now, at a fraction of the power and a fraction of time. So you can imagine that if you can integrate this machine into a data center, now you can unburden some of the workload that goes to the GPU by using our quantum machine at a fraction of the power. So yes, the data center would operate better and people in Virginia would pay a lower bill for their electricity.
Oh, we're always helping them.
Yes.
So is that a QPU? Is that what you call that? Is that a thing or did I just make it up?
No, you didn't make it up. QPU, quantum processing unit. It's the naming conventions come from, let's say, CPU, central processing unit, and then GPUs, which is graphical processing unit. And then it just made sense to call this one quantum processing unit. Yeah. Yes, you will have a QPU that can coexist with a CPU and a GPU and have a hybrid computing platform there.
So do you talk to OpenAI? Are you talking to Anthropic? I mean, I know you're talking about direct business too, but do you work with those companies? Because one of the notes is, we were talking earlier about NVIDIA, is they're owning the ecosystem, but it sounds like quantum is also the ecosystem or the soon-to-be ecosystem. So how would you work?
Without naming names of who we are working with and who we are not working with, quantum can be part of that ecosystem. Now, this technology, it's early stage. Generally, all the quantum companies are at their Gen 0 or Gen 1 generation of quantum computers. So there is still a long way to go in terms of product development.
Is that like 2 years? Is that a year? Is it 5 years?
So I give you some timeline. DARPA, for instance, talked about getting to practical quantum computer based on gate-based quantum computer in 2033. Gate-based quantum computer or universal quantum computer is a very hard quantum computer to make. And there are intermediary steps between now and then. And not everyone needs like a fully functional universal quantum computer to solve their problem. Some problems need just a smaller number of it. It's not a lower computer, but something in the middle level. And we are trying to fill that gap right now. So we are not talking about 2033. In our case, we are talking something in the next 5 years that we show advantage for widespread adoption for our quantum computer.
So there's so much talk now about open source, right? And small LLMs, for lack of a more technical way to say that. Will it be like tiny quantum computers and then big giant? I mean, how will that work? Will they attach to an LLM or it'll replace the LLM?
I don't think they will replace the LLM. They would work side by side, the LLM. They would complement each other. That's the way that it's going to happen. Now, depending on the technology that is being adopted, some computers are going to be big and bulky, the size of a room, and the whole room will be just one computational unit. And that needs to get connected to actually the GPU cluster that is somewhere there. Mm-hmm. And some other quantum modalities are much smaller, rack mounted, that can go sit side by side in the same data center with the GPUs. Our system works at room temperature, and it is rack mounted, and it can go sit.
Room temperature is big.
Yes.
It just saved a lot of power in Virginia.
Yes. And it can go sit side by side the GPU cluster and hopefully work with them. And there are, if you look at other companies that are offering them, the offerings are vast and wide and anything in between. But we think our technology, the way that we have designed it and we are doing it, it's actually very new. It's been backed by 10 to 15 years of very recent research, backed through around like $30 to $40 million grants from the federal government for the academic research that our CEO had done in his academic life. And we are commercializing that part right now. And given that it's very new, we've been able to make this quantum computer operate at room temperature and also be deployed in a very small form factor. And we also own our own chip foundry in Tempe, Arizona, that helps us. Yes, that helps us make very specialized optical components that goes into these machines. There's this exotic material system called thin film lithium niobate that gives you certain engineering degrees of freedom that you can manipulate light in a certain way and basically extract the quantum features from it.
And you guys make those?
We make those and we own this foundry. It's very unique to us and it gives us competitive advantage and it gives us control over not only the supply chain, but also the way that we want to engineer our machines. And that's been a strategic decision that we made a few years ago to build this foundry and own it and use it for our applications.
How long does it take to make one of those chips?
So building a chip, once the design is final, it takes somewhere between a week or a couple of weeks to a month or so.
But it's the design that takes the time.
It's the design that takes the time, and you need to go through multiple iterations. The kind of like metrics that we are looking for right now, we have to be 20, 30 times better than the world record or best world record right now. And that's not an easy task, but we think that there is a pathway to it, and it's more so an engineering problem as opposed to like fundamental physics problem.
So you're a chip guy too?
I am a chip guy.
You're a quantum and a chip guy.
I am a quantum and a chip guy. I'm also the money guy, but I started from technical, and I have a technical background.
That makes all the difference so people see how it's going to be made. That's why I asked you those questions, because people just talk about things, but the question is, what is unique about it? You know, what's special, what's unique, why is there so much nervousness? But I think you really explained that. Now, there's two questions that we always ask our guests. Mm-hmm. Okay, you ready?
Sure.
Okay, what is your favorite AI?
What is my favorite AI?
I asked Jensen this question. I'll tell you what he said. He said OpenAI and Gemini, then he realized what he said, and then he said like Copilot, named like five. So I'm going to give you a minute to think about it. Do you have a favorite? I mean, it could be something like Leonardo or like Guidepost, the help one. I'm giving you a little bit of time to think about it. Well, maybe you don't have a favorite. You don't have to. You're the quantum guy. You don't need to love anything.
I use ChatGPT from time to time, and
that's
it.
There you go. All right. Second question.
Yep.
What is your favorite prompt?
Favorite prompt?
Prompt. Yeah. Like, what's your go-to?
For using AI?
For using AI. Is it, what's the best product, best food? Is there anything that you use?
I typically ask AI to make my crappy writings into a very like sophisticated, posh writing.
Oh, okay. That's all right. Fix my crappy writing.
Yes.
Oh my God, Puglia, it's so great to meet you. You're so terrific. Thank you. Thanks for the work you're doing. Thanks for coming to the Washington AI Network at CES. Isn't this fun?
It is very fun. It is very fun. But this was a really fun interview. Thanks.
I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
While hanging at the Creator Space, we were excited to meet Graham Stephen and Jack Selby. Yes, the Iced Coffee Hour YouTube hosts. They have millions and millions of followers, and we got to talk to them about it. And now you'll know why people love them.
So what's the secret sauce?
So if, obviously, they have a book, you read the book. If they have media on them, read all of the media. You could go into high school records. You could do whatever you want. That's all I'll say. Find information on the guest and come up with the best possible questions. Be contentious. Argue with them a little bit. Try to get a viral clip.
Who's your favorite interview so far?
And they're all fantastic.
Yeah, it's hard to pick an
answer. Alex Hormozi's always been good.
Alex Hormozi's been great.
Dr. K has been fantastic.
Dave Ramsey.
Let me ask you a different question. What was the most surprising thing on any of these interviews that you didn't expect them to say? Because just to your point, you're trying really hard not to talk about the same thing. Anything surprised you that someone revealed? I'm asking you this because Jensen Wang from NVIDIA just did this interview with Joe Rogan.
Yep.
And he told all these stories, like sad stories, happy stories of his life. And again, like you make people feel really comfortable. So that's what Joe Rogan was really surprised is the bottom line. So anything surprise you?
I would say it's not extremely surprising because it's kind of a widely shared fact or whatever you want to call it, but a lot of the people that are very successful came from very hard lives. It's not like they were raised in comfort and they decided out of nowhere they want to make their life hard and pursue entrepreneurship. Most of them came from a hard life, so it's easy to justify something as difficult as building a business for many years.
Okay, so there's lots of brands here. Did you meet any of yours or any of them here?
No, we just arrived like right now, but like I said, I'm going to try to stay for a few hours. I want to talk to Rode. Right there.
Oh, yeah.
I want to talk to Lexar. Mm-hmm. I'm going to talk to Sony. If Sony's here,
I've seen him.
I just need to walk the campus, see who's here.
You got to walk the campus. I have two recommendations. One is the AI recliner that's next to us, but I don't want you guys to get stuck. Because, maybe you could. You could do that. Maybe you do the show from there.
That'd be a great video.
Yeah.
Like, it's stuck.
That would be a good video. Second thing is, I do not want to see you guys in the ring with the Chinese fighting robots. You haven't seen those yet, have you?
Where is that?
I have not.
That's on the other side of the hall. Believe me, you'll know because people are lined up. But then they get flattened, and I don't want the robot to flatten you or for you.
I appreciate that. Maybe he could use that. I mean, his boxing record's 0-1.
Okay,
if he got a win under his belt, he could
at least
have
a nice, even... Like, even feels I could do that.
Yeah.
A robot.
Hopefully.
So, what's your favorite YouTube short?
My favorite YouTube short?
Yeah.
It's by this guy, Topper. I don't know what his last name is. It's really funny. They turn off the lights, and then they start smacking each other with belts or something.
Oh, my God.
It's got hundreds of millions of views, okay, across all platforms. It's hilarious.
Okay, and yours?
I have no idea.
What a bad guest he is. What a bad guest. He can't even answer.
No, but you know what the thing is? No, because he does all his research. I got this.
I forget the shorts. There's no memory.
This is why it works. Like, you react, and he's like working, ChatGPT or Claude, even while we're talking. All right, speaking of that, here at the Washington AI Network, we always ask two questions. It's a very serious, important question. What is your favorite AI?
My favorite AI right now is Gemini.
Why?
Because I think that they're the most accurate and they're fast. I feel like ChatGPT has been slowing down recently.
Ooh. All right. And what is yours?
Gemini, and I like anything Adobe right now.
Wow. Okay. Second question. What is your favorite prompt? What's your go-to? What do you recommend for others?
Prompt?
Your favorite prompt.
I treat it like a Google search.
Okay.
I don't have prompts.
Okay.
Write something.
No problem. You should help others because you're so good at the research.
I guess so.
Yeah, come on. All right, what's your favorite prompt?
People say don't do it, but honestly, the most value I've found is putting people in bikinis.
Yeah.
We did that on Grok with X yesterday, and Graham went viral for tweeting with us and Mr. Beast bikinis.
Okay.
I really like asking it to round out my personality because people say don't use it as therapy. I've used it to ask critical questions about my character, and it comes up with some really good points.
Like?
You're really asking to out myself, huh?
I am. That's what's key.
I think I get in my head and take things extremely seriously, and sometimes it reminds me to not take things so seriously, and it puts problems into perspective. So that's something that I'm working on, and it reminds me whenever I'm going through something and, like, venting, I'll pull out of it and it'll be like, Jack, it's not such a big deal. You're okay.
All right, I like that. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree.
This is Tammy Haddad signing off at CES 2026. See you here next year.
Thank you for listening to the Washington AI Network podcast. Be sure to subscribe and join the conversation. The Washington AI Network is a bipartisan forum bringing together the top leaders and industry experts to discuss the biggest opportunities and the greatest challenges around AI. The Washington AI Network podcast is produced and recorded by Haddad Media. Thanks for listening.